Welcome to On and Off the Field Sports Podcasting with a purpose. I got my on the field.
Rest assured, this is your boy Coach Boston, a.k.a. Steeler Nation, a.k.a. I am the son of the next interviewee.
Oh my goodness, a.k.a. Mr. Ray Lewis of podcaster, a.k.a. Jarvis. Now, this is your off the field coach, Mr. You Better Live, a.k.a. You know what? Coach Reed back, a.k.a. Mr. Football Know-It-All. Listen, y'all. Episode number 8, we in the building. What's up, Coach?
What's good, Coach?
So, you know what?
Happy Father's Day,
Happy
part
Father's
two.
Happy Father's Day to you.
What's up, Coach?
What's up? What's
class clown intro.
I love it, bro. All right, check this out. Let's get into it. Again, I got to preface this, y'all. He makes this up. I have, only thing I got to do with this is that I participate, which is enough. So I'm gifted by association. All right, here we go. You ready, Coach?
Yes.
What does a Cowboys fan do after winning the Super Bowl? They turn off the PlayStation.
I told you we was going to have some Cowboys humor today.
You know that's going to spark some hatred, right? Shout out to the Cowboy Nation.
It's game 7 of the NBA Finals.
All right.
A man makes his way to the seat at center court.
All right.
He sits down and the seat next to him is empty.
All right.
He leans over, asks his neighbor if someone's sitting there.
All right.
The neighbor responds, "No, the seat's empty." The man exclaims, "What? Who in their right mind would have a seat to the NBA Finals and not be here?" The neighbor responds, "Well, the seat is mine. My wife passed away. This is our first NBA Finals apart."
Okay.
The first man responds, "I'm sorry to hear that. Is there no one else that could have took the seat?" "Yeah, but they are at the funeral."
All right. Listen. Usually long jokes are not funny. That was a long funny joke. All right. One day a man came home and was greeted by his wife, dressed in sexy lingerie, right? She said, "Tie me up," she purred, "and you can do anything you want." So he tied her up and went golfing. No, bro, no, dude.
The wah-wah.
He get a wah-wah. You don't do that with the lingerie, bro.
No.
You don't give up the golf hole for the
lingerie.
Yeah, for the other hole.
A Giants fan, which is interesting because my dad is a huge golf fan. Would
Dr. Boston do that?
He might go for the golf ball.
Oh, Doc.
He might go for the
ball. All right.
But check it out. A Giants fan, an Eagles fan, and a Cowboys fan are climbing a mountain.
That's bad.
They're arguing about who loves their team more. The Eagles fan insists he's the most loyal. Mm-hmm. "This is for Philadelphia," as he jumps off the mountain. Not to be outdone, the New York Giants fan says, "I am the most loyal," as he pushes the Dallas Cowboys fans off the mountain. Says, "This is for New York."
Hey, where do you get these from, bro?
The internet, man.
No,
corn sight.
All right. What's the difference between Tiger Woods and Santa Claus? Oh my goodness. I'm gonna read that again before I read the answer, dude. What's the difference between Tiger Woods and Santa Claus? Santa Claus stops after 3 holes. Let me get a thumbs up.
How do you make a Dallas Cowboy cookies?
Go ahead, bro.
Put them in a bowl and beat them for 3 hours.
That's what happens, too. That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to go down with interview, don't we?
Yeah, we got to call.
It's Dr. Boston. Hold on. Yeah. Let me get Doc on the line.
Let's get Dr.
Boston. So, look, do you want to tell the people about anything about
who so this? Talking? So, okay, you call him. This is Dr. Boston, my dad. He's the former AD for about 30 years, former New York Giant, former CFL BC Lion.
Whoa.
Former football coach, defensive coordinator at Montclair State College.
I'm going to get the dialing, brother.
And former member of the NCAA selection committee.
Okay.
Yeah. Lots of, hopefully he'll answer because he didn't answer earlier.
Hello.
Good morning, Dr. McKinley Boston.
Big King.
Good morning.
Sir, my name is Rick Hesley.
Hold on a second. I can hardly hear you guys.
Okay.
Can you hear us?
Can you hear?
Hello?
Hey, can you hear us now?
I can hear you better now.
All right. Dr. Boston, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
We want to give you a hand clap. Welcome to On and Off the Field, podcasting with a purpose. This is Mr. You Better Live. I am Mr. Football, a.k.a. Coach Reback, and you know the other guy. I think you're familiar with this other guy.
Hey, Danny, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
This is an honor. Let me say this, sir. This is an honor for me to speak to you. This is an honor to hear your voice. It's an honor to meet you. I mean that. I'm a huge football fan. I'm not going to say I'm a New York Giants fan, per se, but I'm a football fan. I'm a huge diehard football fan. I know a lot of football history, and it's an honor, and we honor you, sir, on this day. Happy Father's Day to you.
Welcome, welcome.
Welcome, Dr. Boston. How are you, sir?
Okay. Glad to be with you.
So we got our first question for you.
Yes, we got our first question. What's your favorite NFL team and why? I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to say.
I'm sorry, say that again.
What is your favorite NFL team and why?
Well, obviously the Giants, and because I played for them for a couple of years.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, three-part question. Where are you from? Where did you go to high school? And what sports did you play?
I'm from Elizabeth City, North Carolina, which at the time was the segregated South. Went to an all-black high school, P.W. Moore High School. And what was the third question?
What sports did you play?
Football. I was All-State in football, All-State in basketball, All-State in track and field.
Wow.
And played baseball.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Awesome. So describe playing sports during the segregated South, like being in the South and segregated.
Well, the only difference was, you know, obviously you didn't know what it was like playing against, you know, white players. So, you know, we just played against each other and assumed that we were better than them. And wow. I didn't find that out to be a reality until I eventually went to the University of Minnesota, where I competed against white players for the first time and realized that they could play football too.
During our last interview, there was a theme of mistreatment by the Pritchard, Alabama police against blacks. Any run-ins with the Elizabeth City, North Carolina police during your youth?
Yeah. On a Sunday afternoon, two friends of mine, this is during the Civil Rights Movement, we were walking down the street. One of my friends arbitrarily picked up a brick and threw it through a Woolworth window. And obviously we started running. I was in front, tripped my heels, and I fell. And the old redneck policeman put his boot on my neck and obviously used his slang back in those days. Boy, what do you think y'all doing? And I just knew I was gone, but
wow.
Fortunately, they arrested me. My mother was a caterer in that small town and had catered for the chief of police, and so she knew a lot of the people in power. And so they got me out of jail, and but that was my experience with the white police, you know, back in those days.
Wow, that's interesting. Dr. Boston, how'd you get to Minnesota, and what's your recruiting story? What's that like? What was that like?
Well, you know, obviously my high school coach went to A&T University in North Carolina, and that was pretty much where I was going to go. And then all of a sudden, the University of Minnesota, Michigan State, USC, Indiana started recruiting me. And Bobby, I don't know if you remember these names, but Bobby Bell, who played for the Kansas City Chiefs, all pro with Shelby, North Carolina.
He was a running back, right?
Carl Eller, who played for the Minnesota Vikings.
People Purple Leaders.
Was from Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
I do
Lou
remember.
Lou Hudson, who played basketball for the St. Louis Hawks, is from North Carolina. So when I went on a recruiting visit to Minnesota, all of these North Carolina people were part of that visit. So obviously I became very comfortable in my visit, and so that made the choice to attend the University of Minnesota a lot easier.
Wow. Describe your first memories of arriving at the University of Minnesota and what it was like being a black student athlete there in the 1960s. Any do's and don'ts?
Well, fortunately, the summer after graduation in 1964, the coaches had arranged for me to have a job. So I came to campus and was working campus construction. And I had an apartment that I was staying in with Lou Hudson, University of Minnesota basketball player, and obviously played a lot in the NBA, a guy named Archie Clark, who played for the Lakers. And but these guys were like juniors, and I was coming in as a freshman. So I ended up sharing an apartment with them. And obviously it was a wild ride that summer. But it was,
wow.
I bet.
You want to share the details back then? You want to share the details of them wild nights there, Dr. Boston?
No, but I survived.
All right. So you pledged Alpha Phi Alpha. Tell us why'd you pledge and how you go about pledging?
Well, Alpha was the only black fraternity on campus at that time, and there had been conversations that Kappas and Omegas were going to create a fraternity on campus. But at the time that my sophomore year when I pledged, Alpha was really the only choice. And so we, about six of us, decided to pledge Alpha, and about six of the other guys joined white fraternities. I'm obviously glad that I chose the Alphas, and there wasn't. We became the first undergraduate chapter, MU chapter. The people that actually started the fraternity, not started the fraternity, but started the chapter on campus, were graduate students who were former undergraduates at the university.
And, okay. Wow.
But started in 1966 and been an Alpha ever since.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Shout out to the Alphas.
So we've got a little segment. This is your granddaughter's segment. It's called the Mary's Nerd Nugget Fun Fact.
Mm.
The last time Minnesota won the Big Ten Conference title in football was in 1967. How does it feel to be a part of the last Big Ten championship football team?
Well, we keep waiting for the record to be broken, but
it's a long time.
We're kind of like the old Miami Dolphins.
Right.
That undefeated team,
right,
that
Don Shula.
Every year. They keep saying, the record's going to be broken, but we remain the last Big Ten champions.
Wow. Did you ever think you would return to your alma mater as an AD?
I had no clue. When I left in 68, all I was thinking about was what's next. And the first hurdle I had to overcome was to try not to go to Vietnam to be a part of the Vietnam War.
Wow.
And the social service agent there in Lisbon City, woman by the name of Ruth Scott. Now, how in hell I remember that name from so far, but
I will remember too.
She was going to send me to Vietnam. And I ended up being in New Jersey for a weekend. And during that time, I went to a party, was whining about having to go to Vietnam. These guys I met ended up telling me that their commanding officer was a diehard Giants fan. So they said, when you come to the check-in tomorrow, you know, we'll meet you and we'll introduce you to him. So I go down on a Saturday morning to the induction center thinking that I'm getting ready to go to Vietnam, and I got training camp a month and a half away. I ended up going through the medical review, and never will forget it. I ended up getting a 1F, which is physically unable to perform.
Wow.
And then obviously went to training camp, and as they say, the rest is history.
Wow. Physically unable to perform.
But could play for the Giants.
Wow. Yep, thank God.
So go back, I'm assuming, did you play in the blue-gray game, right?
Yeah, December of 1967.
So what was it?
Charlie Sanders.
Okay.
Charlie Sanders and I. Charlie was a tight end for the University of Minnesota and played, obviously, for the Detroit Lions.
He was in the Hall of Fame,
and,
right?
He was a Hall of Famer, outstanding player. We were driving up from his home in Greensboro, North Carolina. And when we got to about 10 miles outside of Montgomery, we saw this big billboard that says, "Welcome to Alabama, home of the Ku Klux Klan."
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Now, this is after spending 4 years in liberal Minnesota, you know, where, you know, you had come to appreciate diversity, integration, and, you know, you're very comfortable in your environment. You didn't sleep with one eye open, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, we're seeing signs about the Ku Klux Klan and hoods.
Oh, my wow.
But surprisingly, I thought we would be in an integrated situation, but the white players actually stayed in a hotel downtown, and we stayed, and the black players stayed in a hotel skewed toward the black part of town.
Wow. Oh, interesting. So, Dr. Boston, what was it like to play for the Giants?
Well, obviously, when you're in it, you don't think much about, you know, what you've accomplished. You just, you know, it's a job. You know, you go to practice, right. and you know, when you sit down and have coffee with Fran Tarkenton, you don't say that, wow, you know, this is one of the best quarterbacks of all time. You just having a cup of coffee with friends, you know. Homer Jones, Spider Lockhart, they're your buddies. People that you just, you know, go to work with, you know, you go to war with. And but in hindsight, you know, obviously, and you gotta remember, back when I was playing, there was no AFL.
Okay.
So, you know, to make, there was only 26 teams, you know, in what is now the, the league where the Packers, the Bears, you know, those, the San Diego Chargers, the Kansas City Chiefs, the AFL.
Right.
They didn't exist. That merger didn't take place until 1970.
Okay.
And so, you know, for us to make an NFL team at that point, you know, you had to be lucky and kind of talented, because, you know, the opportunity, you know, there were less than, I think it was only 26 teams, if I remember correctly.
Okay. I got to know this before we move to the next question. Coming out of the tunnel, what was that? You know, I see a lot of things nowadays. It's a lot of hype, and it's like it's really. I love it when, you know, they show pregame and they're in the tunnel and coming out of the tunnel. I hear a lot of players saying that the adrenaline rush. What is that like coming out of the tunnel to thousands of fans just screaming? Like, what is that like?
Well, it's an adrenaline rush, and you know, you get excited. You're already excited, obviously, because you know you're getting ready to play a game. You're pumped up because of, you know, the competition. I think the time that I felt like the most pumped, we were playing the Chicago Bears, and I had an opportunity to play against D.L. Sayers, who was obviously one of the best running backs in the history of the NFL. And, you know, that opportunity, you know, I was sort of pumped. You know how sometimes when you're getting ready to play against talented people,
you get
a little bit more pumped than another time.
Exactly, Dr. Right. Boston. I love it. That's what I was talking about. I needed you to take me in the tunnel with you, and you just took me in the tunnel with you. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
What did you do with your first NFL check?
That's an interesting question. I probably went to the bank.
And made sure it was in there, right?
Yeah, no, I was, actually, we got paychecks. This was, you know, direct deposit was a long time away.
All right. How long did you play?
I played 2 years, with the Giants and 2 years in the Canadian Football League with the Vancouver British Columbia Lions.
Really? So, real quick, what was the difference between playing for the NFL and the Canadian League?
Well, 12 players for the Canadian League and 11 for the NFL. That was the biggest difference.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But the three downs instead of four downs, and the field was 10 yards wider. But the talent level really wasn't that different. I mean, because a lot of the players, you got to remember, there were a lot of talent that had no place to go because there were so few teams in the NFL at that time. So the talent level. But at the same time, there were only, if I remember right, 10 or 11 Americans who could play on a team.
Right.
So the Americans pretty much covered the talent of the Canadian teams. And then, obviously, over time, Canadians got better, and the quality of the Canadian team got better.
So one quick question, I want to ask about the. So is there an advantage or a disadvantage? Like, say, if you played in the Canadian League prior to coming to the NFL, are there any advantages or disadvantages from transitioning from Canadian to NFL?
Yeah, because obviously, and you have to depend on the time. Nowadays, the talent of the Canadian Football League is significantly better than it was, because now a lot of Canadian players who are born Canadian play college in the United States, and so they're coached better, their training is better. You know, the biggest difference.
Want to play for the Canadian League?
He did.
Yes,
he did.
The biggest difference is that they're just not as many quality players as there is in the NFL.
Okay.
What was living in Newark, New Jersey like as a Giant in the late 60s?
Well, you know, Newark, at one point, let me put it this way. The area that I lived was I had a park across the street from me called Weequay Park. It was kind of like Central Park in New York, outstanding. We lived in a gated apartment, 24-hour doorman service, indoor pool, I think the apartment building was like 20 stories high. So, you know, where I was living in Newark was a lot different from the other part of Newark.
Wow. Okay. What were the salaries like, and who had the largest salary on the Giants team at that time? What kind of money were y'all making?
I'm going to guess that Fran Tarkenton would be the highest paid, but my salary in my first year was $30,000. I got a $15,000 signing bonus. But one of the things that happened with the Giants is that they had an off-season speaking forum. And so, and the owners of the Giants were Catholics, diehard Catholics, and they would support Catholic organizations, Catholic churches, by having current players in the offseason speak. And so while my base salary for the Giants was $30,000, I made as much during the offseason by going to speak to, you know, different Catholic organizations. And like the first one I went to, I didn't realize that I was going to get an honorarium, because we were getting $300 a week just to accept speaking engagements. But when I finished, the guy gave me an envelope, and it was a check for $500.
Wow.
I saw on the memo section of the check, it says honorarium. And I'm a college graduate, but I had no idea what honorarium
was. Wow.
Honestly, I went and looked it up, and, you know, payment for services.
Right, so, right.
And so when the woman called to ask us if we wanted to accept a speaking engagement, once I knew that, you know, we're going to likely get an honorarium, I accepted a hell of a lot more.
Right.
Of the speaking engagement. But I would say my first year between salary and public speaking, I probably did about $60,000. So, you know, back in 1968, you know, that wasn't all bad.
Okay, if you look at, real quick, you look at that compared to, you see the kind of salaries they're getting nowadays, Dr. Boston, you see what they're signing for nowadays?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Big money.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's called inflation.
Right.
Which NFL player do you remember to hit you the hardest?
Oh, that's easy. Bob Brown played for the Philadelphia Eagles, and we were playing the Eagles in Yankee Stadium, and it was long yardage, like a third down, and I did the Deacon Jones move. I did a swim move, made a play, and on the way back to the huddle, Bob Brown said, "Don't do that shit again, rookie." And I said, "F you, Brown." And about, maybe half a quarter later, I did the same move. And if you look at some of the old NFL movies, you'll see Bob Brown had his hands taped up like boxing gloves.
Wow.
And when I did the swim move, my midsection was exposed. And Bob hit me right in my solar plex with them boxing gloves on. and I was down for the count.
Did it take
looking
the weird
up,
eyes?
Looking up at at the top of Yankee Stadium, crying like a baby. I couldn't get my breath. But that one I'll never forget.
Okay. What was playing in the CFL like, and how long did you play?
2 years in the CFL. I sprained my knee in my second year, and the doctor said that I could rehab it, or I could not have surgery, or I could have surgery and probably continue to play. And at that point, I decided that I would go back to school and finish my degree and pursue a career. And I wasn't sure. I thought it was going to be just coaching. But as it turned out, after I finished my undergraduate degree, had an opportunity to get to be a graduate assistant. Okay. So I pursued a master's degree, and a guy hired me as a professor and teacher at Montclair State College. And as it turned out, I had an opportunity to pursue a doctorate degree at New York University.
Wow.
And so that's still a series of things happened over a period of 5 years, and that led, obviously, to a career in higher education.
So how did you get into coaching?
When I was at Montclair, one of the head coach and I met, and he asked me if I'd be interested in working with his players from time to time. And I said, yeah, why not? And I didn't really have any specific sort of charge at that time. And after a year, he was obviously became impressed with my ability to teach and my understanding, you know, of defense. And so after a couple of years, he hired me as his defensive coordinator. And I did that for 15 years.
Okay.
And, so I was coaching, teaching, doing intramurals, and became director of student services at Montclair.
Okay.
And that led to the rest of my career.
Was Sam Mills the best player you ever coached?
Yeah, although there was another linebacker that I coached who also played in the USFL, a guy named Benny DeMarinis. Benny was 6'4", 235. You know, ran like a 4.6, and
he was a linebacker.
He was physically looking. He was a better looking linebacker than Sam. But Sam was obviously
Sam didn't look
short, stocky. Yeah.
So this guy 6'4", 235.
Yeah, that was the that was at a Division III school.
He was big.
Yeah.
For a linebacker.
That's big for a linebacker.
Wow.
Yeah, he was 6'4", 235. He could play.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so how did you become an athletic director?
Well, when I, as a director of student services, one of the things that I did was work closely with the athletic people. And whenever I had the opportunity, I networked, you know, with them. And eventually, over a period of time, I felt like I had the skills and the knowledge necessary. So I applied to Division III school in New Jersey, Kane College, and became an athletic director there for 3 years. And then I was ready, thought I was ready and was ready for a Division I job. And so I applied to the University of Rhode Island. In fact, the funny thing at that time was that was the old Yankee Conference, and Lance's alma mater, University of Maine. So I actually got to see Lance play while being in the same conference. And then after 3 years at Rhode Island, I took a giant leap and became the first black athletic director in the Big Ten Conference. And at that time, there was really only three out of 315 Division I schools. There were only three black ADs in the country. Gene Smith, who is in the process of retiring from Ohio State now, and a guy named Charles Harris, who eventually became the AD at Arizona State, and myself at the University of Minnesota. And then in 91, Mike Garrett became the AD at the University of Southern California. So for about 20 years, there were four black ADs in the country of Division I schools. Mm. And I think now, the last I heard, there were 15 out of about 315 schools.
Okay.
So still not a lot. It's sort of an exclusive club, if you will.
Okay. Dr. Boston, let me ask you this. So you were on the, if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, you were on the NCAA basketball Final Four selection committee, right?
Correct.
What was it like being on that?
Well, you're spoiled, number one.
In what
that
way?
That was my favorite committee, by the way.
In what way are you spoiled?
Oh.
Well, number one, you know, you get to travel around the country and stay in some of the nicest hotels. The gifts that you receive from the different towns that you receive, I mean, that you visit to host games. It's one of the, and as I understand it, the kind of wining and dining that we were given back in those days can't happen anymore, obviously, because people are jealous and, you know, they will call you out. But back when I was on the committee, you know, again, we were really, really treated like special people.
Wow. I went to the one in 92, and I stayed. I don't know if you remember this, but you had just moved there. And so you had an apartment in down, I think, off of Hennepin Avenue. And so you had no need for the hotel room. I stayed in your hotel room as a visitor. Every time I came out of the hotel and back into the room, there was a gift, like it was Santa Claus.
Wow.
It was a VCR, you know, sneakers.
What?
Cameras. I mean, it was golf bags. I mean, it was tons of just stuff, corporate
gifts. How old were you?
I was in college. I was probably 22. I was just finishing to graduate from Maine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, my
God. I didn't remember that.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. That's how I met Randy. That's how I met Randy that weekend.
Randy Carter.
Yeah, that's when we hung out that weekend.
Wow.
Yeah. So tell us, what do you do now? Any political aspirations?
Yeah, I play lots of golf 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 9 o'clock, and I'm running for Martin County Commissioner. Just had the primary about 3 months ago. I won the primary, and the election starts in November 5th. So if I'm lucky, I'll be inducted as a county commissioner in November. If not, I'll continue to play golf.
Okay, so not wrong with that.
I gotta ask you this because I heard you say. Congratulations on your political aspirations also. Much success, I pray. I gotta ask you this. What's your golf swing like? What's your tee off?
Well, I'm a 12 handicap, so my average score is always in the low 80s. You know, we have those days where you can have a special round, mid 70s, and you have those days where you can't hit a shot and you're in the 90s. But you know, I've been lucky. One of the perks of being in my business is I played some of the best golf courses in the world. And I had an opportunity to play the Masters down in Augusta, and you know, that was like a dream come true. And
now, Dr. Boston, I gotta ask you this: did please tell me, did you play at Pebble Beach?
Yeah, I played.
My goodness!
Yeah, I played 4 or 5 times at Pebble Beach.
So I gotta ask you this. I saw it on TV. Is it as pretty in person as it is on TV?
Yeah, it really is. Dude. Except for the first 3 holes, it is. I was really disappointed because I hadn't. I was expecting this lavish, Healy golf course, and once you get past the 3rd hole, then it becomes what you've seen on TV.
Wow.
It becomes pretty special.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome, Dr. Boston. All right. Here we go. This is what we call our Final Drive Sports Jeopardy. We're
going
to ask you a few questions, and we get excited about this part. So we're probably going to laugh a little bit, too, Dr. Boston. So here we go. Your first question is, where were you when Dr. King was assassinated, and do you remember the Newark riots that took place in Newark?
Now, the riots were before me, and if you give me the time that King was assassinated,
1968.
But I don't remember off the top of my head.
August 1968, because I was born that
night. I was in training camp in Fairfield, Connecticut.
For with the Giants?
Yeah, for the Giants.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
All right. So you are asked to speak at a roast for charity. During your speech, Will Smith walks up and smacks you across the face. What happens next?
I punch him out.
That's a simple answer, right? All right.
I don't think I'm going to turn the other cheek.
All right. We kind of doubling back on this one. What was the nicest golf course you ever played, and why? I know you just say you played at Pebble Beach, but what was the one, in your opinion, the nicest golf course?
Augusta.
Oh, wow. Why?
It's serene. It's hilly. It's manicured. You know, there's not a prettier golf course in the world.
And what was that one again? Augusta.
Augusta.
I got to look that one up.
How does Caitlin Clark compare to Montclair State's legend, Carol Blazdowski?
I put them in the same category. Carol was ahead of her time.
Yes.
She was a great player, and in the pro league that they had at that time, she was an outstanding player, and she was bigger than Caitlin. But she was special.
Coach, real quick, give me your rundown on Caitlin. Your opinion.
I like, obviously, been around sports and seen a lot of quality players. She's obviously strong because, you know, she takes a beating. But the thing that separates her from anybody else is that, you know, her strength to be able to shoot from as deep as she can, you know, without sort of hurling the ball. I mean, she actually, you know, shoots the jump shot.
Right.
And obviously strong enough. She doesn't need to be squatted, you know, to sort of angle the ball up. I mean, she actually jumps and shoots it.
Right.
And I find that to be unique, you know, with her.
Okay. All right, here's another one for you. All right, what would be the first thing you would do if you were elected president?
If I was elected, that meant that I knew what all the issues were. Probably say a prayer.
You say, say a prayer. Say a prayer?
Yeah.
I like that. I like that.
Okay. First, Jordan versus LeBron, who do you choose?
I take Michael.
I like that, Coach. Okay.
Second, who was the Jordan versus LeBron debate for your time period?
Uh, Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell.
Who you got?
Oh, I mean, Wilt was a bad man, although Russell won a lot of championships.
So who you picking, Coach?
I'd say Chamberlain.
You got Chamberlain?
Chamberlain. The Chamberlain easy.
I like that. All right. What show or movie have you watched too many times?
Oh, God.
I like his answer already.
I'm sure it was a Western, but I can't. I know what it was. The Magnificent Seven. I've probably seen it 20 times.
I like that movie.
The Magnificent Seven.
Yes.
You seen it?
I've seen that. I like that movie. I like a good Western. My pops is a, we asked my pops the same question, and he said Gunsmoke. He likes Gunsmoke.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've seen it a million times, too, what you said movie.
And, yes, sir.
And obviously.
Yes, sir.
What do you think Chamberlain is working with, Painless or the non-military?
I think Painless.
Painless.
Painless, yeah.
So we got an episode, Travel Through Your Eyes. Tell us somewhere cool you've been.
I'm sorry?
Tell us somewhere cool you have been. We have an episode called Travel Through Your Eyes. Help us see something special somewhere you've been.
Well, probably Tokyo.
Tokyo. Wow.
Nice.
And the thing that was most interesting, I was walking down the street in Tokyo, and I'm, you know, 6'2", and, you know, there's thousands of people on the block, and I'm, like, head and shoulders above these people as I'm walking.
Right.
Is there any photos of that?
That was the weirdest thing that I've experienced in a long time.
You got any photos of that?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, Dr. Boston, I don't know why your son always gives me this question to ask. And it's not that you are and will be, but just hypothetically, all right? If you were on death row, what would be your last meal request?
Chicken? Fried chicken?
Fried chicken.
What about the condiments? What to go with it? What's the side?
Oh, rice and gravy, my mother's rolls. And green beans.
Green beans for a vegetable. I got you. All right, then. Okay.
Best athlete you competed against in high school, college, and pro?
High school, I'd say Jimmy Ray, who ended up playing quarterback at Michigan State. But we played in the North Carolina North Carolina Championship game our senior year. And after that game, I went to Minnesota and Jimmy went to Michigan State.
Okay.
And it was an excellent game. And he was a hell of an athlete.
All right. Who is your favorite comedian? Richard Pryor.
Pryor.
Yeah.
He's a GOAT.
He's the GOAT. How do you know, remember the Titans coach, Herman Boone?
Well, Herman and I knew Herman well. Back the house that we're living in now in North Carolina, I bought the land from Herman and gave it to my mother-in-law, and they built the house that my wife and I are staying in now. And, you know, Herman was a Kappa, and our team played against his team, and, you know, we beat them like 6-0. But, you know, they were a 1A school. But when Herman left here, in fact, interestingly enough, I played golf regularly with the white guy that they hired instead of hiring Herman, who went to Alexandria and wrote history.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. All right, here's a question. What's your favorite beer to drink in high school and college? Your favorite beer?
Heineken.
Heineken.
So that's is that German?
No.
Heineken. I used to drink Heineken. Is that what is
we
that?
We called it Green Death.
the green bottle.
Yes.
Here's a good one. Do you remember your last loss in one-on-one basketball in 1985?
No.
Yeah, that was when I beat you.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
That was your last one-on-one loss. You refused to play anymore, so that was the last loss.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I was going to say, Lance, back in the day in the backyard, you didn't win too many.
I didn't. And it was at that moment, when I got bigger, he started to play physical and dirty.
Oh, really?
Push me down, would not allow me. You know, it was not pretty for
Dr. Boston, I know he's not.
But I worked on my game, and I knew that shot was going in, and it was over.
Dr. Boston, give a count of yourself, sir, please. Go defend yourself.
Not from 85 on.
Go ahead and defend yourself, Dr. Boston. Go, you got the floor.
Well, no, I was making him tough.
All right. Just give us your favorite book or verse in the Bible.
My favorite book, probably the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Okay, now give me your favorite book in the Bible.
Actually, I'm reading right now. I'm about halfway through. Our church is actually we're reading the Bible. I would probably say, the Old Testament. I'm about halfway through the Old Testament.
Okay.
But I can't pick out a particular book,
but okay.
Just reading about the Exodus
okay.
Moses' leadership and his relationship with God.
Wow. I like that.
I mean, that whole thing is kind of special.
It's awesome.
Especially if you've seen the Ten Commandments.
Right. Absolutely. Right.
Okay. Last three. You're a college freshman signing up for your fall courses. The only three classes left is freshman English 102, taught by Professor John Grissom. English 103 is taught by Professor Walter Mosley. And English 104 is taught by Professor James Patterson. Which class do you sign up for?
Walter Mosley.
You didn't even hesitate. Why?
Well, I've read everything that he's written. Probably about 20 books. I read a lot of Patterson stuff, and John Grisham's The Firm was one of the first books that I read that wasn't educational in nature. That was a long time ago. That was an excellent book.
Wow.
But I became a fan of Walter Mosley. I read or got everything that he's ever had. In fact, his most recent book was the weirdest thing that I've ever read. In fact, I stopped reading it because it didn't make sense. He should have left that one on the typewriter.
Alright, I got a twofold question for you. First part is, the best four athletes in any sport that first come to your mind for your generation. Best four athletes.
What was the question?
Your best four athletes in any sport that first come to mind from your generation.
Walt Frazier, Earl Monroe, basketball, Jim Brown.
Wow.
Gale Sayers.
Okay, that's good.
Football.
I like that.
Willie Mays. Willie McCovey in baseball.
From Mobile.
Right.
And let me see. So that was football, baseball, basketball.
Right. All right. Now let me ask you this: who is your generation's Mount Rushmore of athletes?
Probably Jim Brown.
Okay,
Jim Brown.
Wow, I like that.
Okay, last question. You're one question away from winning the National Spelling Bee for $1 million. The host looks at you and says, how do you spell the section of Newark, New Jersey where you used to live and get your haircut? Weak way.
WEEQUAIC.
You got $1 million, sir. You win $1 million, sir. Dr. Boston is the proud winner of $1 million. Thank you so much, sir. For any last words you want to say to the people, because the world gonna get to know you, sir.
No, I've enjoyed the conversation with you guys, and you're doing a good job. I've followed Lance sends me your podcast, and I've followed, and you guys are growing in it, and you seem to be getting better and better at it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Boston. It's a pleasure having you, Dr. McKinley. Boston of the New York Giants, guys. We so a pleasure having you on, sir.
We appreciate it, guys.
All right, now you take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Hey.
Wow. Like history.
That was fire.
It's like history.
Yeah, bro. That was fire. That's good stuff. Coach, we got to download that one, boy. Episode number eight. Hey, it's the On and Off the Fields podcast, sports podcasting with a purpose.
Rest assured, this is your boy Coach Boston, aka Steeler Nation. Here we go. Happy Father's Day.
It's your off the field coach, Mr. You Better Live, aka Coach Rebeck, aka Mr. Football Know It All. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers. Thank y'all, you know, for joining. Hey, stay tuned. We got more to come. It's Coach, episode Coach. 8. We out of here, baby.
Chamberlain got that.
I think Chamberlain got the. The AK-47.
Yeah, he was the AK-47.
Yeah, I like how you posed that question too, off the rip like that. We out.